has been really, I would say, again, house-trained, as has the FSB. To a degree, this goes back to 2007. Then the FSB had actually refused to allow an armed group of Kadyrovtsi into their headquarters. And how had Kadyrov responded? He responded by welding all the doors to the FSB headquarters in Grozny shut. Talk about imposing a siege. It then actually required the efforts of the, at the time, head of the FSB, Nikolai Patrushev, now Security Council Secretary, to broker some kind of a deal. But nonetheless, that deal ensured that from that point on, Kadyrov would have a veto on whoever would get appointed to its chief. And so we come back to Igor Kochnev. Yes, he's not a Chechen. He's never been in Chechnya. He comes from the oil-producing region of Tumen. And that's the point, the oil-producing region of Tumen. Because apparently, so I've been told, Kochnev also has something of an axe to grind with Igor Sechin, the infamously powerful and infamously unpleasant head of Rosneft. And back in 2018, it was a mark, I would suggest, of Kadyrov's strength that he and his clan even managed to beat off Sechin's attempts and ensure that the oil company Chechenneftekimprom, wow, I'm surprised I managed to get through that. Anyway, ownership was shifted from federal ownership, which in practice meant to a large degree Sechin's control, into ownership by the Chechen Federal Chechen Republican authorities. So they actually managed to snatch an oil company away from Sechin. And the word is that Kochnev played some role in that. Now, I would love to know what, and frankly, I could probably make up what it was. I don't know. There's been suggestions that he sort of passed the Chechens information that was then embarrassing for Sechin or whatever. But I honestly don't know about that. But what it does mean is that, in other words, this person already seems to have had some kind of relationship with the Chechens and been deemed to be a useful ally. So, yes, he's an outsider on one level, but one can question how far he really is. And this is part of an overall process we've seen of, in effect, nationalising all sorts of resources within Chechnya into the hands of the Chechen Republican State, which basically means Kadyrov, or into the hands, of, more directly, of people who are Kadyrov's allies, proxies, and so-called wallets. I mean, if one looks, for example, at, oh my God, I just realised I've set myself up to have to say it again, Chechenneftekimprom, it was placed under the control of Khozbaudi Alviev, who is one of definitely sort of Ramzan Kadyrov's so-called wallets, and along with his brother, is in charge of a wide range of major projects. So this is how Kadyrov operates. First of all, he expresses fulsome and complete loyalty to Putin and to the Russian state. Highly performative, in many ways terribly stylized, but nonetheless, that sort of sets the overall tone. At the same time, though, he also, and this is in some ways reflecting his own character, but also in some ways reflecting something he can produce of value for Putin, is to precisely act as one of these scarecrows who can say the really extreme things that allows Putin to look like the mature and balanced man of judgment, and also implicitly to give that sense of, don't push me too far, because if you did anything to destabilise my regime, look at the monsters who are waiting in the wings. So in that respect, again, it is part of the political positioning of the Kremlin. But thirdly, and perhaps most crucially, Kadyrov sets out to exploit the Russian state. And that doesn't just simply mean in terms of the financial resources, a huge portion of which goes to Kadyrov directly, both to maintain his rather elevated quality of life. This is, after all, a man who has his own zoo, one of only 20 Lamborghini Reventons ever produced in the world. And in quite entertainingly for me, in 2022, he was videoed wearing military camo, playing up his full tough guy line in $1,500 Prada boots. But beyond that, also a lot go into his vanity projects, And more to the point, just simply in ensuring he buys the loyalty of his Kadyrovtsi, the members of his elite and such like. You know, so the money is absolutely central to his political power. But it's not just that. It's also that, in fact, Moscow gives him, in effect, cover to carry out whatever brutalities and abuses he wants without having to worry about the international community and international law and such like. Moscow gives him authority. He can go gallivanting around the Muslim world, in effect acting not just simply as the representative of a small impoverished territory, but as a representative of the entire Russian Federation. So, you know, for all these reasons, plus the fact that ultimately Moscow will be act as the backstop to protect his rule, this is all very good for him. And at the same time, any time that it looks as if Moscow is reconsidering the terms of the deal, even in the smallest levels, and much of the time, let's be perfectly honest, this relates to funding and a desire to try and cut down on the amount of money that is being, as many in Moscow would think, wasted in Chechnya, well, Ramzan threatens them. He, I mean, sometimes he picks a fight, such as with Ingushetia over territory. He's done that in the past. More often, though, he just simply muses about the possibility of giving up the job, perhaps becoming just an ordinary soldier, as if he really would. And this terrifies Moscow, because they have convinced themselves, wrongly I would say, but they didn't ask me, convinced themselves that without Ramzan Kadyrov, Chechnya risks falling into yet further anarchy and rebellion, and they're going to be sucked into a third Chechen war, which especially now is something that they can't even conceive of, let alone fight. So every time he does that, it's Moscow that gives in. So this is the situation. He expresses loyalty. He speaks the unthinkable. He exploits Moscow. And he covertly threatens it. And in some ways, we are seeing all of these elements of the wider picture being played out on the Ukrainian battlefield. That he says that he's ready to basically, he and his men, they would win the war with their own methods if Moscow was willing to unleash them. In that respect, he's threatening, well, he's not only saying that he's loyal, but he's actually threatening the use of massive brutality. Even more massive brutality than is already being demonstrated, which is no small feat. But at the same time, he's using his language to, in effect, protect his men. He doesn't want them in the front line. He doesn't want to be taking casualties. Firstly, because obviously the Kadyrovtsi are the people who hold him in power, but also if more and more bodies started to come home, there is a risk that that would generate some kind of backlash against Kadyrov himself. So it's essentially performative. And whenever Moscow might be thinking about wondering what on earth these Chechen forces are actually meant to be doing in Ukraine, he basically creates another political furore. And this is the final sort of key point I'd want to make. This spat with Prigozhin was entirely convenient for him. Again, I would stress, I don't think in any ways it was because of some kind of secret deal or whatever. I just think he was waiting for an excuse. Whether it was Prigozhin, it would have been, if not him, it would have been someone else. Because there has been some suggestion that more forces ought to be being moved from Chechnya to the battlefield. And in particular, forces that Kadyrov raised saying they would be going to Ukraine, but which seem to have had some kind of unaccountable delay in actually being deployed, perhaps while they go through unit composition or flower arranging or whatever else. So just at the point when there's beginning to be some sort of sense in Moscow that Kadyrov needs to make good on his promises, Kadyrov once again kicks up a fuss, and I suspect this was intent of basically showing how disruptive he can be if he puts his mind to it. Now again, it's too early to see precisely how this plays out, but if past processes have been any kind of guide, then basically Kadyrov will, you know, probably find some other reasons to take umbrage with other people at other times, and within a month or so, the talk in Moscow of trying to put some kind of pressure to bear on Chechnya will fall away, because people think, frankly, it's just not worth the hassle. To close with a personal anecdote, back when I was still travelling to Russia, I remember once being put up at the Presidential Hotel, which is very swish in that late Soviet refurbed post-Soviet Russian style, still has portraits of a variety of dictators who stayed there up and such like. Anyway, the Presidential Hotel is notorious as being one of the, in effect, the headquarters of Chechen activities within Moscow. And in particular, Adam Delmikhanov, whom I previously mentioned, actually lives there. And, you know, along with his staff, his hangers-on, his security and such like. And I mention his security because one morning I was there and I thought, I'm feeling a little bit in need a bit of activity. It wasn't quite the weather to do much outside, so I will go to the gym. Stuck my head round the door and it was full of muscle-bound Chechens pumping iron to their heart's content. And I thought, actually, maybe I'll go for a walk instead. And you'd see them heading off around Delmikhanov, no doubt feeling very cool in their black suits, their earpieces, their strangely bulging jackets and such like, as they got into a succession of Mercedes G-Wagons with flashing blue lights on the top. But once when I was watching one of these, again, really quite stylized and performative departures, I just happened to exchange a glance with the Russian policeman who was outside. And, I mean, it was clear that he was absolutely not impressed. And so even here, although the Chechens have an astonishing and fearful reputation for the use of violence and for their determination, I can't help thinking that in some ways this may be a reputation which to a degree has outlived its accuracy. Back in the days of the Chechen War, the heyday of the Russian Chechen Mafia, that may well have been the case. Now, though, I don't know. I mean, this notion that they are killers or poseurs, or perhaps both, is, I think, one we're going to have to go back to. And particularly because at some point there will be some kind of a challenge to the status quo in Chechnya. It may be a resurgence of terrorism. I suspect it's more likely to be that as the Russian economy continues to grind down, it will be harder and harder even for Kadyrov to maintain the same levels of financial assistance, especially if the war is still going on. And that could well have a catastrophic impact on the local economy and also a little bit more covertly on the political economy of Kadyrov's regime. So at some point, I think we can expect renewed reasons to be interested in Chechnya. And when it comes down to it, then we will see whether these indomitable tough guys have got, well, I hesitate to say a little bit fat and lazy, but perhaps they have got a little bit too accustomed to their status and not having to prove their violence. Closing factoid, something that I always thought was so fascinating, was precisely that Chechen organized crime had such a reputation for willingness to use violence, very high levels of capacity with the use of violence, and above all, a willingness to basically fight to the very bitter end. And as a result of that, interestingly enough, when it was tabulated, Chechen organized crime gangs were less likely to actually become involved in gang wars because others, people who might well have been willing to try and fight a rival Russian gang or whatever else, when it was the Chechens, they think, no, it's not even worth trying. Let's make a deal. So the Chechen reputation was actually often not tested. What happens in the underworld can, after all, also sometimes give us hints about what could happen in the upper world. But anyway, enough about Chechens for now. Thank you very much for listening. Well, that's the end of another episode of the In Moscow Shadow podcast. Just as a reminder, beyond this, you can follow my blog, also called In Moscow Shadows. Follow me on Twitter, at Mark Galliotti, or Facebook, Mark Galliotti on Russia. This podcast is made possible by generous and enlightened patrons, and you too can be one. Just go along to my Patreon page, that's patreon.com/inmoscowshadows, and decide which tier you want to join, getting access to exclusive materials and other perks. However, whether or not you contribute, thank you very much indeed for listening. Until next time, keep well.
I'm lost.
Come on, desire.
trust you. I'm going.
Go.
Ooh.
We're not alone.
Without examples, without models, I began to believe voices in my head that I was a freak, that I am broken, that there is something wrong with me, that I will never be lovable. Years later, I find the courage to admit that I am transgendered. And that this does not mean that I am unlovable. So that this world that we imagine in this room might be used to gain access to other rooms, to other worlds previously unimaginable.
Who are you?
We zijn zo moe, ik ben moe, hij loopt weg, niemand wil, geforceerd op het podium word ik gezet, ik snap het al net, maar ik dacht, jij weet het, dus daarom lul ik even door, ik denk ik ga er nog even voor, maar eigenlijk dacht ik, het is wel welletjes nou, hoor. typische reclame, Jean Fred. Hè? Misschien nog niet. Wat vind jij, meneer met je bordeauxrode pet?
Dank je wel.
Het is toch nog geen speedo time, of wel? Wat vind jij, Christopher, hoe heet je nou?
Cariso.
Cariso, dat is toch een moeilijke naam?
Ja, dat klopt. Daar, ik heb me geïnterpreteerd. Cariso. Ja, maar pas twee namen later.
Oh, dit is een mooi nummer, ja. Die heb ik gezien in het binnenhuis, in zijn eentje met een accordeon deze man. Dat is cool. Ik kan het wel spelen, ja. Maar mijn kazoo is te kort voor de accordeon.
Ja, ja, dames en heren. Gaan we het nog even een beetje heet maken hier rond het vuur? Misschien als we erin zakken, kunnen we nog één hier een keertje losgaan. En dan gaan we naar het poppentheater kijken. Oh, ja, ja, ja. Ze moet erbij komen. Dus nu ben ik spontaan met twee microfoons aan het woord. Om één keer. Ja, ja. Voel die vering.
Nee hoor, laat je niet alleen.
Voel die vering.
Was dit het einde van mijn leven? Je weet het nooit.
We love you.
Want ik hoorde dat er poppentheater was op het veld, wat ik nog even wil zien, met skeletten, majoretten. Jean Fred, zeg jij eens wat.
Het is sowieso over 10 minuten, 10:45 moeten wij stoppen. Maar dan gaan wij verder binnen. zal natuurlijk één of twee minuten duren voordat ik weer operationeel ben binnen, maar het gaat wel door. En de Kato, geef ons bedankt.
Dankjewel, DJ Spang. Voor de uitnodiging eisen. Fan van mij en mijn accordeon, maar die had ik nu niet, want mijn snoer was te kort. En ik vond het ook wel leuk om even wat anders te doen.
Kiss your face.
Zoals dansen in een dienderjaar.
Turn your cheek. Lay your head down. Lay
wat gaat er gebeuren? Er gebeurde net wat. Je bent te laat. Gemist.
Lay your head down. Lay your head down.
Wil je wat zeggen, Cebu? Hij is niet zo spraakzaam, hij is timide. Wil iemand nog wat zeggen? Misschien jij, wil jij wat zeggen? Op de radio. We zijn nu live op Radio Patapoe. Wil iemand nog iets zeggen?
Say nothing.
Mooi liedje no. Dit. We kunnen ook gewoon even luisteren met elkaar.
I can see when you're lying. Oh.
Zeggen, het was fantastisch.
When you're alone, you're so alone.
It's beautiful, I mean, it is with fire.
When you're alone, with you're fire. So alone.
Het was inderdaad fantastisch, dankjewel. Ruigwoord. Dankjewel onszelf, God, violen. Eten. Drinken. Hier is het leven toch echt wel goed.
We all have dreams, we forget.
Oh, hij wil niks zeggen.
We all have dreams, we forget.
Wat een mooi liedje dit, Jean Fred.
When you're alone, you're so alone. When you're alone, you're so alone.
Merci, vie. La vie en rose. Ange, je prends dans mes langues. J'envoie la vie en rose. Ange, l'or de l'ombre. Je vois la vie en rose.
Ik heb ook altijd een beetje moeilijkheid. Stekels, alles hard en schreeuwend van de diepe smart. Get rid of the bullshit.
Laatste nummer zegt Jean-Fred. Ik vind het wel een mooi einde dat wij hier staan. Bij de bijna volle maan. Buiten adem, maar we hebben het toch relatief goed gedaan.
Adem.
Ik zeg altijd blijven ademen. Zachtjes.
Oh my god.
Ik weet een goeie. Zacht is het nieuwe hart.
Zachtjes. Zacht is het nieuwe hart.
Dankjewel. Wow. Poet, vrouw. Laatste nummer. Wil er nog iemand wat zeggen? Wie wil er naast mij komen staan en even zijn dingen, hè? Even spitten, even waar je mee zit. alsof alleen maar even voelen dat je er bent. Wil jij nog even, schat? Je moet snel zijn, want ze komt weer.
Wil je niet weten? Mag ik een heel groot applaus voor Cato? Wat een inspiratie! Kijk eens aan, alle stijlen zijn voorbij gekomen.
Dankjewel.
Voor iedereen.
Gigantisch bedankt, Cato. Dus nu wordt hier afgebouwd, vuur blijft branden. Maar ik ga nu binnen door tot 3 uur, denk ik. Heb ik begrepen.
You are my favorite DJ, Spain. Thank you so much.
En hij gaat zo dus binnen verder. En ja, als je graag in de baarmoeder van het kabouterhuis je terug wilt trekken. Maar volgens mij kun je dat beter pas over een half uurtje doen. Of niet? Toch, je gaat ombouwen. Merci bien, tout le monde.
Dankjewel.
When I die and then lay me to rest, I'm gonna go to the place, the place. When they lay me down to die, I'm gonna do the spirit in the sky.
Tribes. Now we're both almost extinct. But sometimes you gotta stick with the ancient ways, old school ways. Now you understand me? Thank you.
Nog een liedje.
Ja.
Hier en nu.
Het is wel een bekend, ook een bekend liedje.
Goed zo.
Shri Ram Charanam Prabhu Krishna Sharanam.